What is your freedom worth to you? Each of our guests had a lightbulb moment. They longed to live rather than merely exist. They smashed through their fears and programmed minds, trusting themselves, their faith, and their survival instincts, leaving the guilt, fear, oppression, and drudgery of their past for a brighter future. They took a brave and courageous step into freedom. This is their story of how they got a life. Welcome to Get a Life Podcast, X-Cult Conversations. You matter, and so does your story.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Get a Life Podcast, X-Cult Conversations. I am Cheryl Hope, and I am an ex-member of the Plymouth Brethren Christian Church, or Exclusive Brethren, as they were previously called. I left in 1992 from the locality Maple Creek, Saskatchewan. Today, we have Cassie with us and our special guest, Malcolm Hart from New Zealand. I'm going to allow Cassie to reintroduce herself, and then we will get on with the podcast. So go ahead, Cassie.
Hi, I'm Cassie Davies. I'm a former member also of the PBCC, and I left in 2005. I grew up in Clanny, Western Australia, and I have recently started my own podcast called Breaking Free with Cassie, and I'm here supporting Cheryl with Get a Life Podcast today.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Cassie. Before we get on to Malcolm's story, I want to do a shout out to Olive Leaf Network. For those of you that don't know, there is a charity set up in New Zealand and in Australia called the Olive Leaf Network. And from the amount of messages that I am getting, not only on in our emails, but across social media, I know that it is starting to get quite messy in there. And I want you to know that there are lots of help out here. So you can contact Olive Leaf Network for anybody in New Zealand and Australia. You can also contact them if you're in other countries and need help. Also, I want you to know that there are many systems that are set up to help you. If you are even in contact with anybody who's a social worker, the police can put you in touch with anybody. So I just want you to know that if you are uncomfortable with priests visiting you, the way that, say, if you're underage, your parents are handling you, there is help available. What you are going through can be supported. So please, please reach out. I want to introduce Malcolm Hart. So thank you, Malcolm, for joining us. We really, really appreciate that you reached out to tell your story. I am going to just hand the mic over to you and allow you to introduce yourself, where you're from, and how you left the PBCC. So go ahead.
Hey, ladies. Appreciate you having us on. Yeah, so as Cheryl said, I'm from New Zealand. Grew up, born in Hamilton, and grew up there. Loving family, loving society. Under the Brethren, got married in there. I've got a lovely wife and four children. And then in 1990-2000, it all started to unravel for me. I've been a very cut and dry person for a long time in my life. Dad was an engineer. I'm an engineer. And to me, things are either right or wrong. There's no grey areas. And it was in 2000, there were little things going on in the church, and it's like, well, that doesn't seem to be according to the teaching. And Dad and Mum did a great job, I think, of teaching us the rights and wrongs in life. Mum used to often say to me when I'm leaving for school, I remember it, and when I was leaving for work, Mal, have a good day, just do what's right. So it was something that really just was embedded in me, to do the right thing. So when things didn't look right, they didn't pass the litmus test of right and wrong, started asking questions. And those questions in the Brethren are just not really appreciated. You're expected to toe the line, and that's it. Don't ask questions, just do the doing. Don't do the asking. It's not your job. But even that attitude, really, it just didn't sit well with me. And it's like, no, we're here to help one another, and we can often only help, like in my trade, like we're encouraged to ask questions if you don't know something, because that's how we all learn, okay? We learn off other people. So that was good. So we had Dale and I, we still were going to the meetings, but not really enjoying them. We come out afterwards and nobody much had talked to us because they could see we're struggling, and people are not good at embracing one another or helping one another in there, really. Because if you do that, you're just watch it, you mightn't be towing the correct line. So we ended up getting a couple of country music CDs, and the kids were pretty young. They were only sort of 9 down to 4. So they were going to school and listening to music at school. So we got some of their dance music and got them on the CDs. I mean, what's wrong with that, eh? And then Dale started going to the gym after having our last child. And of course, she wasn't going there in long dress and long sleeve shirts. She was wearing shorts and gym clothes. And of course, this came out. My mother came around one Saturday morning while the kids were bouncing and dancing to the tunes. And of course, oh, crikey, that's a big no-no. So it got raised up to the priest, obviously. And it's like the priestly started, and it's like I just couldn't see really what was wrong with it. Although I knew, you knew deep down that this was crossing a line, shouldn't have this stuff. But I guess by that time I was flipping them the birdie essentially and saying, well, if you got an issue with it, take issue with it. And they did. So then I had Alan Thomas come along to me after one Saturday morning meeting and say, hey, Malky, we understand you're going through some struggles. Your name's come up to go to the Sydney Fellowship meetings. We'd like you to go. And I says, oh, that's cool. That's great. And there was a big but. It's like, but you need to get rid of the CDs and Dale needs to stop going to the gym. And my reply to him straight away, as quick as a chip, was just to say, but that's blackmail.
Wow.
And I said, Mr. Thomas, I said, you know as well as I do that I need as much help as anyone. I'm just a sinner saved by grace. And he didn't really have any answer to that. I says, I'd love to go. But I says, I'm not going or being forced to give up something that's so meaningless to go to your fellowship meetings. And God knows I need some help. So didn't really have an answer to it. The priestly just increased and we were on the outside and eventually came to the stage. Because there was me and my little confident self thing. We had our own little business at that stage, so that was a bit independent. And there's sort of it wasn't a problem. Dad really helped us into that, and we built a building together, me and Dad, and shared the costs. We were in there half and half. And but in the end, with the priestess, I said to him, "Well, look, if you really want something to get upset about, I've actually started getting my pilot's license. Take that." And they just struggled with that because, of course, you weren't allowed to get your pilot's license because you're going to be using the radio and the ear's the devil's domain. I mean, gosh, don't you know that? And this is after my best friend in there had actually got his pilot's license, but he didn't use the radio. There was provision within the training syllabus with the outside companies that you could fly a plane by using lights, which is what you use if you're flying a plane and all the radio communication go out. You have lights, and I'm not even that sure how it works, but the control tower flashes you lights and gives you permission to land or not land and that sort of thing. And it's like, come on, we're going back to the dark ages here. So look, it just went on, and we didn't have a desire to leave because there's this innate fear in you.
Yeah.
The world's a big, horrible, worldly place that's full of evil people. And, of course, I was dealing with them on a daily basis, and I didn't really find that so bad. Most of my customers were worldly people, and you just get this idea that perhaps I'm being fed a bit of bullshit here. So it did go on, and we were shut up and told that we couldn't go to the meetings. It was like, oh, crikey, but we didn't really have any interest in getting more priestlies. It's like, well, we're just going over the same old stuff and we're getting nowhere here.
What were they saying in the Priestleys? Like, what were they?
Well, we didn't really have many after we were shut up. In fact, the memory's a bit blurry, but I can't remember whether we had any, because I just essentially was blew them off and says, no, I'm not interested in talking to you. We went the first Saturday we were out, we went right out the back of Hamilton, which was a little, no, it was not a big journey, half hour or three quarters of an hour drive to this little old man I found out the back of Huntley. The New Zealanders will know where Huntley is. And we brought a TV. I mean, we just had a beautiful little family with inquisitive people, with inquisitive kids. And it's like, well, I wonder what this TV thing's like. So we got a TV, and there we were, a little family just glued around the TV. It was pretty cute, really. And as a catalyst, like, one of the best and greatest things I've got in life is the fact that my wife and I are so close. Yeah. From such an early age, we just talked about everything, and we've had our ups and downs, as any couple has, but we were like, we're almost like one. We know how each other thinks. We know when someone's hiding something, as in like an emotion they don't want to bring out and stuff like that, and yeah, we're pretty tight. So we were pretty tight as a family. We just really enjoyed going to the beach with our kids and stuff like that. And doing all these little things were a bit naughty. I had a radio-controlled plane, which was also a terrible thing to have. And I always had a love for fixing things, and I still do now. Like, I started off by fixing bikes, pedal bikes, and then the next thing I had a three-wheeler motorbike. And so sort of, I guess, always pushing the boundaries a little bit, but I didn't really fit this mold. If you talk to Peter Hart about it, he'll say, yeah, Malky was always this petrol head, and it's like, he always liked his fast cars and stuff like that. And it's like, you realise out here, there's nothing right or wrong with that. It's just who we are. And I think we tend to focus on bigger things out here. It's like true love and what it truly means to be happy and stuff like that. And if there's one thing I'd like to say to some of those in there, it's like, when we came out, I'll just go back a little bit. I think eventually, and I never have had this confirmed, I've asked my brother, who's still in there. I've asked priests that Neville Godden, that's still in there and active as a priest, what were we withdrawn from for? And I've never had a clear answer. But I think what we were drawn from for is having to do with those under assembly discipline. So it's like,
which flies in the face of their faith in practice.
It does. You think about it in a way. There I was just a young man and with a young wife. We had a young family and we were trying to find our way through life. And essentially they found a way to kick us out because I was too questioning. It's like, really? Is that really the Christ that was portrayed and taught in the Bible? I mean, Christ went up to that prostitute and embraced her and said, go and sin no more. It's like, how simple is that? That's just the simple love of Christ. It's like, was that shown to us? It's like, no. It's like, it's despicable, really. It really is despicable. But I feel sad for those in there because they just go along, and it's often because you haven't got the strength to fight against it. You look at some of those that have, and how they've just been ridden down through the courts and driven to suicide somewhere. I remember there's several during my life that have taken their life because they just couldn't cope anymore. And it's like, brethren, I just like to cry out to you and go, brethren, like, get away from the teachings of a man and follow your Bible.
Yeah.
Because the Christ I knew early, and that's why it's caused me to doubt my belief. I don't know whether I believe or not. I don't even know whether there is a God or there isn't a God, because from what I was taught, I can't really see, I cannot see the leaders in there following it. Because it's such a simple message. But then we've got to look deeper than that, because if you go back to why Christ was crucified, it was just a person that was too simple for the people around him wanted, and they said, we've got to get rid of this, because in a way Christ was too simple, he was too humble, he was too pious, and the establishment didn't like it. And essentially that's where the brethren are today in it. It's a sad position.
There was something that was said, Steve Simmons said it on his podcast. I can't remember if it was the first one or the second one. And he had talked about how if Christ was back here on the planet, you know, and there's two groups of people, one being the homeless, the hungry, the ones that are suffering, or Bruce Hales and what he's created, where would he go? And we all know the answer to that. We know 100%. Where Christ would walk to, right? Absolutely. And it's not $2 million mansions and people who think that they are the best of the best. He would go and walk to those that actually need help.
Those are actually called the Pharisees, aren't they?
That's right. If we want to put a name to it, and if you want to study your Bible, it's like that's the pigeonhole they're going to go into. Yeah. And it's sad that they don't... I really believe that Bruce Hales almost is an embodiment of the devil.
100%.
I feel absolutely that strong about it. And I know, I've asked my brother about it, and I just asked it an inquiring thing. He's in the Brethren and got a big family and stuff like that. I said, Dave, I says, do you really think Mr. Hales is leading you on the right path? I says, I can so remember so clearly with my dad having a conversation on the driveway. We had a steep driveway leading into our house, and all the other kids and family had got out of the car, and there was just Dad and I left, and we had a great old talk about the system days and how evil it was, and what was the family in New Zealand? The Ivories. It was just how that... It was like trying to mix oil and water. It just should not mix. You should not bring the commerce in. The church was about Jesus and the teachings of Jesus, and how foreign the bringing commerce into the assembly was. And Dad had a great judgment of it. And then it's just like, it's come back. It's just like the devil has come back so harder and so stronger at the moment. And I just really appeal to those in there. It's like, there's one thing I said to Dad, and he had no answer. Well, there's two important things I said to Dad, and he really had no answer for them. I said to Dad initially, I says, Dad, I understand your position. I said, I've been in there for 35 years. I understand where you're coming from. And I said, Dad, I feel like I'm a flower. And I says, a flower needs sunshine and rain to survive. But I just feel like I'm getting trodden on. And I just feel like a crumbled up old flower that can't blossom. And Dad didn't have an answer to that, as you can probably understand. And the other thing I said to Dad is, I said, Dad, I says, I know the teachings. I know the doctrine. I says, I'll tell you one thing from where I stand at the moment. I says, I'm not an evil person. I says, if the world is as bad as you tell me it is, and the church tells us it is, I says, I'll be back like a shot. But I says, I'll tell you one thing. If it's not, I believe that you've lied to me.
Wow.
And I says, you won't see me for dust. And it becomes so apparent, because you come out here and there's so many genuine people, isn't there? There's people that don't even know you.
Yeah.
Because they've just got a heart of good. We went to a birthday party yesterday for my sister's brother. And there was a lady there. She comes from one of the islands. She just works with my brother-in-law. And he's had issues in life, and he doesn't think quite the same as you and I, and he's a real work in progress. But there was this woman, and I said to her, I said, you're doing the work of an angel. Because she's taken him on. She carts him here and she carts him there. And I tell you what, he's hard work. But she's doing this stuff out of no reward to her, out of no benefit to her. She's just doing that like the work of Christ. And I said to her a couple of times, I don't know if she's a believer or not, but I said, you are doing the work of an angel.
Yeah.
And I aspire to be more like some of that. Unfortunately, so many of us want recognition for the good we do. And you look at RRT, and come on, peeps, there's only one reason that outfit was set up, and that's so you didn't get blown off by the Charities Commission or the inquiry, so you still retained your tax-free status. I mean, it's come on, guys.
Yeah.
It just beggars belief. Why can't we just simply give with no recognition?
And no pictures, no cameras, no...
That's right.
If you're going to give from the heart and walk away because you truly wanted to give.
The sad part is,
Malcolm, that the people at the bottom genuinely believe. They don't know the story. They don't know about the charitable status issue. They don't know why RRT was created. And they genuinely believe that they are suddenly able to do charity and they feel good about it. And they you know, I've had conversations with my parents and they actually genuinely believe in this RRT. And it's such a kick in the guts because it's like, we all can see why it was created. We all can see the hypocrisy of it, but they cannot see it from the inside.
No, and I said to my brother, I mean, I was in my sister's house in Invercargill once. We had a little business. I used to travel right around the whole length and breadth of New Zealand every 6 months sort of thing to see my customers. And I was down in Invercargill and I hadn't seen my sister for 11, 12 years. And so I rang up Mum and I says, Mum, do you think Jackie'd be happy to see me? I says, I'd really like to see her. And Mum said, yeah, sure. She gave me a number and I said, Jackie, I'm in Invercargill. Do you mind if I call in and see you? She said, that'd be great. I'll call along and see her. So I went in there. Unfortunately for me, being such a black and white guy, of course, immediately I say, Jackie, you know, why are you doing this and why are you doing that? And she said, Malky, she said, this can't carry on. I says, stop questioning things. I says, we're in the right position and that sort of thing. And I says, Jackie, I says, unfortunately for you, I said, the shackles have fallen off my eyes. So I was in the house for 10 minutes until I got exposed. And it's like, the journey out here is a real journey of revelation, isn't it? Once you leave.
Yeah.
I know how hesitant we were to go, even to go to my auntie's place for a 40th birthday bash with Uncle Rod. There was this real fear in this. It's like, my auntie's evil. She's an evil person. And I really didn't want to go, but my wife is a lot more abrasive and passionate than I am, and she loves her auntie. And I do too. But you didn't want to go because there's this inherent fear in you that you might get poisoned, you might get hurt. And slowly over the years, I call it the scales fall from your eyes and you can truly see. And I've seen it. My niece has come out after many, many years of a sad, long life in there, and she's come out. And initially I could see it with her and it's like, I'm not going to push you on your journey. Your journey's your journey. My journey's my journey. And you've just got to let it go, because after a while, the shackles, the scales fall from your eyes and you can see clearly. I mean, people could say that I've been poisoned. It's like, come on, guys, really? I don't think so. I try and keep life simple. I'm just doing me. And they could say, well, you're pleasing yourself. It's like, well, that doesn't fly today, does it? Come on, guys, look at what you're doing. I see, you know, some good friends in there, and I'd watched one of their big videos on their business promotion a while ago, and it almost made me sick. It's like, you've got no guts of your own. You're just following Bruce's marketing things. And don't get me wrong, I mean, Bruce Howes is obviously, he's a brilliant businessman.
That's what he is. He's not a man of God.
That's what he is. Yeah. I wish in my little business I had that somebody had come along and helped me know how to market it, because I'm brilliant technically. I know how to fix anything you've got in your house probably, but I'm useless as far as marketing a business. That's just not my forte, and it's probably why I've never really been successful in business, but that's not the measure of a man.
No, and it's true. He is a brilliant businessman, but he also has a monopoly. He has power and he has monopoly. So if he was just a brilliant businessman on his own, that would be one thing. But he is a brilliant business man in a situation where he has power and monopoly over people. So
yes, and he
that's
used
where
it.
The difference is. That's and he's used it.
He's brilliant at how to coerce everybody to believing a certain agenda, and yet he sits there and just eats off of that agenda. Like that's the sad thing about it is all of our family is caught underneath this complete farce that they're all believing. I mean, right to the point where, you know, he was in Barbados recently, stayed in this massive, was given the information on where he had stayed. And you're looking through this, right? And you know 100% that everybody is believing, well, he deserves to stay in a place like that because he's a man of God and he's like taking on the sins of all of us and he carries everybody on their shoulders. Yet they have no clue that they're paying him millions of dollars to hold this position. Then he most certainly is not sitting and bearing the sins of all of you guys on their shoulders.
He's not carrying anybody's pain. No. He's not carrying anybody's pain.
No, he's not carrying. He's making out he does.
Yes, and exactly. Hence why, you know, he's got deceived. He's got the entourage. He knows exactly how to play the role of man of God to make sure that nobody questions that he is not the man of God.
Absolutely, 100%, as well as being a good businessman. So he's good with money and he's got good business ideas. He's realized it. And I would just about bet my life on it that he sat down and strategized how he can manipulate the position for his own monetarial advantage.
Absolutely.
And that was the sad thing when I talked to this friend of mine and he was totally sucked in by it, because actually this friend of mine is actually in a position where he's been quite involved, a bit not as deep as Steve Simmons, I would say, but he's been quite involved. He's been a successful businessman himself. And there's probably a part of him that they don't really want to see flip. But he's just incredibly indoctrinated, and I can't see him successfully leaving because it's too embedded.
But that's the thing. Would the Haleses be so successful if they didn't have the power and coercion over people? Because they have manipulated that power to coerce people into using their businesses or having to use their businesses, and they've got their... And even people have handed over their parts of their businesses to them with the use of that power and coercion. So yes, they're extremely successful business people, but would they be so successful if they didn't have that power and coercion over the whole congregation?
Yeah,
it's interesting, Cassie, because it goes so deep the way he's done it. And I hear recently that he's even started trying to get more of a handle on, you know, where your will might be going and that sort of thing. And it's like, I mean, I got paid out when Mum passed away and stuff like that, and I did ask to see the will. I was never showing it, but you can call it ignorance or not, but I had faith that my family would do the right thing, and I know a lot of families haven't. But I still have faith to this day that my brother did do the right thing, because we got more than I thought Mum had in her possessions, she, you know, and that sort of thing. But so that's great, and I'm just going to leave it that there. Look, money is not on that. I'm not. Well, I need probably almost to get my wife involved here, but it's like I was going to say, I'm not that bad with money, but I probably am terrible with it because I don't put a value on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I, in fact, all through my life, I used to see the salesman when I was doing my apprenticeship, and the way he could just tell bullshit to sell trucks and stuff like that. And I used to say to myself, if I have to drop my principles to become someone like that, I do not want to become someone like that. I will not do it.
Yeah.
And I see, and because money obviously corrupts. The more you have, the more you want, and then you work out a scheme to get more and more and more. I mean, I look at Bruce Hales and say, Bruce, I'd be happy with 1 million of your money, and it would, I don't know whether it'd set me free. It may not, may put me under more bondage. But I says, at what level do you say you've got enough? But that's the trouble with it, isn't it? Money corrupts. And it's not money per se that is the root of all evil. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. Yeah. And It's like, Bruce, can't you just take one scripture and have a look and really analyze it, analyze your life? How like Christ are you? And the answer's got to be, you're not like Christ at all. And that's the sad thing about it. But it's those people that just blatantly follow. And it's like, I'd just like to say to you in the church, if you're thinking about it, have some belief in yourself.
Yeah.
You've come up in a you've come up in a church, you've had the indoctrination for a long time. There must be some reason why you're thinking or you've got doubts. And if you have, I'd just say believe in yourself. And the other side of it is that the world is not full of the wicked one. There's as much evil out here in the world as there is in the church. Mm-hmm. And there's as many good people out here in the world as there is in the church. Mm-hmm. Good and evil abound everywhere. But don't be scared to believe in yourself and have some faith in yourself. And just take a slow journey. It doesn't have to be a fast one. I mean, here's me after 24 years out. I still don't know about my faith.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still on a journey. I've nearly died. I was pretty close. I was all wrapped up and bandaged from top to toe. And it was a pretty big deal. And I'd had some pretty big things. And it was a lot for my family. It really put them through a lot. But here I am today. I'm alive. I've got a lovely bunch of people around me, and every day I find more people to love. I fly in and out of PNG for a job, and I tell you what, when you go to a place like that, you come away thinking and say, God, I've got to be thankful for where I was born that, and what I've got. I may have a big mortgage and stuff like that, but there's people over there that have got nothing. We took on a 45-year person the other day, and they'd never had a bank account.
Oh, wow.
They've just got nothing. And I see some struggling, you know, to make the decision to come out. And it's like, because if I come out, I'll lose all I've got. I'll be destitute and stuff like that. And I know that's hard. But as you said earlier, Cheryl, there's a big support network out there. There's just genuine, there's a lot of genuine people. And if you just cry out in humility and stuff, you won't be left alone. Mm-hmm. People will help.
Yeah.
If someone turned up at my door, I'd give them a bed and, you know, you'd try and help them. But there is one other thing about being out here. Most people that give you a hand or help you out here, they want to see you independent. So, I mean, I've had beggars in the street come up to me when I was dressed in my nice business clothes over in Perth, actually, Cassie. A beggar came up to me on the street while I was waiting for the lights to cross and said, look at you all dressed up. He says, can you give me something? And I turned and looked at him and says, excuse me. I says, no, I'm not going to give you something. I says, everything you see me in today, I've worked very hard. I've never had anyone in life. I've had people loan me money and I've paid them back. But I said, no one has ever given me a handout. There's no excuse for being on the dole. I said to him, I says, you get out there and find a job. I says, you do some work and get some work. I'm not going to give you anything. And it's true out here. People will help you. I won't see anyone stuck, but on the same hand too, I'll also help you to find a way forward under your own steam so you can make it.
And have that's the biggest gift we can give anybody is to show them how that's to stand up on themselves. Yeah.
So,
and you know, so because you left as a family, and I know what this is one of the biggest questions that I get asked, and I know other people, other families that have been asked, how was that transition for your children? How did you guys navigate the transition from being kicked out and then helping to your children to integrate into the real world? How did that go for you guys?
It was interesting, and perhaps if I can take it back a couple of steps, both my parents and my wife's parents were withdrawn from at a similar time in their life, when you think back on it, to when we were booted out, because they questioned things.
Mm.
Now, one big thing that was in their life, and it was obviously affected me, is like in those times where my parents and Dale's parents were withdrawn from, all us kids were taken away from our parents. So there's a huge psychological influence on our parents to get back into fellowship, because if they don't get back in fellowship, they've could possibly lose their children. So that's a huge thing. So what happened? I mean, our eldest boy, he was 10 when we were finally booted. He was starting to go down to the neighbor's place and watch TV and this sort of thing. And, you know, just normal inquisitive behavior of a 10-year-old. I mean, that's kids learning to live, right? And Dale and I talked about it, and it's like, there's no way we are losing our family out of this. So we saw this happening because both of us had been a product of our parents being withdrawn from and being taken away and living with other brethren. And it's an indelible thing on our life and our history. So we came to it, both Dale and I, that it's not going to happen. They're not splitting up our family. We're a good, tight unit. We had too much fun together. We're not letting them do that to us. So, and it was actually very scary when we were shut up. At that very time we were shut up, all our kids were up at Dale's parents for the school holidays or something like that. They were always great at looking after them. They had a few acres and the kids used to love going up there. Dale got on the phone straight away and her dad said to her, he said, I'll never do that to you, Dale. So it obviously scarred him, and it did. Dad was a great man. He was lovely to me as a son-in-law and stuff. And he says, I'm never going to take your children away from you. And he says, you have the weekend together, you and Malk. And he says, on Monday, I'll drive down and I'll bring the kids back.
Wow.
But it was a huge thing. And it's like our kids struggled when, like, Jerry had a bosom buddy in there, his little friend Daniel. In there, they were just as tight as thieves. And Jerry would cry himself to sleep after he came out because he couldn't have to do with Daniel. And he used to play that song of Elton John's, Daniel. So they really struggled, the loss of their friends. And Betsy, they probably won't be totally happy that I'm mentioning the names, but tough kids. It's part of my life and it's your part of mine too. So, I mean, the little ones, Brittany and Sade, they can't remember quite as much of it because Sade was only 4 when we came out and stuff like that. But Betsy certainly had some great friends and couldn't understand why they couldn't have to do with these friends and stuff like that. But it was a real strength to us and something I'm so thankful for, that we were so tight as a family and we kept on having fun stuff. I mean, we eventually went and got a little red speedboat and we did water skiing and biscuiting and stuff like that and had a lot of fun together. And we slowly made friends. I mean, we had other exes that were out here and families similar age. So we had to do with them, knocked around for them, went camping, but never made friends very fast. In fact, the great friends we've got today, a lot of them are a result of the appearance of our kids' school friends.
Yes.
Because another thing that got thrown up a lot by our own kids to us as parents, and let's face it, you only get one shot at parenthood and you don't get a rerun of the movies. It's like, it's real stuff bringing up kids. The kids used to throw at us, oh, you're just saying that because that's your Peeb teaching. And that's just what Peebs do. It's like, all my friends are not doing that. So what I guess we're a little bit cunning as parents, and we called their bluff. So we went and talked to these friends' parents and says, hey, this is what our kids doing. What are your kids doing? And they said, bollocks, that's just part of parenting. We're doing the right thing for kids, and no, our kids aren't going to that either. That was a great confirmation that the decisions we are making on a day-to-day basis with our little family were the right decisions.
Wow.
And that was reassuring. It's like, I don't need another man to tell me. I mean, for Pete's sake, I love building houses. I had to wait 3 years for my wife to grow up because I was a bit of a cradle snatcher. So I spent those 3 years building my own house. And it was a great experience. Well, we sold that house, went to rent in a little one, and the only way I could see the way forward was to build another house because it was the cheapest way to get. Well, the brethren didn't like that idea. It's like, no, we don't build houses. So I sat down and I penned a letter to Mr. Hales. I said, Mr. Hales, I says, it makes financial sense for me. I'm just a young fella with a young business and a young family trying to make his way in this world. And I says, I haven't got the money to go out and buy a $200,000 house, but I have got the money to build a $100,000 house. And it makes financial sense for me. Well, Mr. Hales was too sick to read my letter, but anyway, Neville got and came back and says, no, Mr. Hales has approved you. He's agreed that it makes sense to do, so you're free to go and build a house. So I went and built a house, much to the chagrin, obviously, of a lot of brethren in there. And once again, Malky was getting a hard time just for being Malky. And it's like, well, tough for you.
And, so I just wanted to pause here for a second for anybody who is not a part of the PBCC or what was a part of the PBCC. So for our listeners of non-community members or ex-members, this was a thing. You had to get permission from Bruce in these kinds of things. So 100% what he is just saying, he had to get permission. That was a rule. And it is absurd. It is an absolute absurd rule that you literally have to call the man of God to find out if you can build a house.
If just to build a house. And look at the mansions they're buying today. Yeah. So you weren't allowed to live rurally either. Well, I guess that was the other naughty thing, because after building this house that I asked Mr. Harold if I could build, it wasn't long until we went to the Tauranga Sunday morning reading, and we came back and there was a for sale sign off at this rural property that was only just out of the city boundary. And kids were all asleep in the back and Dale was tired. I mean, we'd just come from Sunday of having whiskies and stuff at lunchtime and all a bit tired, but it's like, no, I'm going to call and have a look, huh? He said, oh, you can have a look by yourself. She wasn't interested, didn't want to borrow it. I mean, we'd just built a new house. We'd been in there for a few years. So I went and had a look, and then, you know, push came to shove and we finally agreed that, hey, this is a cool thing to do. Three acres just on the edge of town, and the kids were growing up, and, you know, we could have some animals and kill our own meat and teach the kids about life and death and stuff like this. It was great. Of course, me being a mechanic, I could get motorbikes and stuff like that, and it's great sort of thing. But yeah, it's like, so didn't ask Mr. Howes about that one. We just went ahead and bulldozed and got it. And of course that created a whole new scene of, oh, you're living outside the city boundary and you're too far from the supper and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, it didn't actually take us any longer to get to the supper than it did before. And outside the city boundary, oh, it might have been 100 metres out, but who's splitting hairs here? You know, I mean, what does it even matter? I did it for my family. We had a great time. We had calves, we had lambs. I can still picture, we had a ewe that was in lamb and she was getting ready to give birth and she was having a hard time of it. I can remember I had four little kids all sitting around me watching Dad help this ewe give birth. Aww. And he ended up putting my hand in and pulling this lamb out and was dead. And it's like, that was a huge thing for the kids. And just imagine, you got a little four-year-old just eyes just wide apart, wondering what on earth's going on. But it's the teachings of life and death. And the kids used to love, we had a one of the guys in there, Lewis Hoyle, he was a great father to me. He actually, his son was booted out and he lost his son, and he almost took me on as a de facto son. I used to go out and work there in the school holidays and stuff like that, and we often used to go out, all of us, on a weekend and ride on the motorbikes around the lambing time and help with the, you know, the farming. It was a beautiful time in her life. I'll never forget one time a ewe came in and she'd had a bearing, which is really where the uterus sort of comes out outside, and it's a death knell for the ewe because you can't breed from again. It'll just happen next year. But so it was like, okay, this ewe's not going to make it. So she was fully pregnant and nearly ready to birth this lamb. And he took her into the shed and he basically performed a Caesar on her and got this little lamb out of it. He suckled her on the mother right then and there to get the colostrum out of her, because that's almost a, you know, the lamb will struggle to survive if he doesn't get the colostrum. Got the lamb out and turned around and gave it to me and said, there you go, Mel. There's a lamb for you. You can take it home and see if you can get it to live and then give it back to me. you know, once you get it through them. And we called it Justin because he's born just in time. But it's like I often think back to those times and teaching the kids what it truly means to live and die. And it's like we've all only got one season on this earth.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you going to do with that season? I nearly passed away, you know, 5 years ago. But I've been given another chance. Who knows why? I'm a little lost soul. But often think, I'm like, is there a song about it, whatever? It's just like I'm just a poor lonesome cowboy a long way from home. And we are, all of us are on that individual journey. And I just appeal to those in there that are thinking and wondering and, you know, is this right or is that right? Just have that simple belief in yourself and just keep on that little journey you're on and believe in yourself and talk to those that talk to you kindly and don't listen to those that are trying to put you up against the wall. I used to love the old ones in there. There's an old chap, Bruce Suckling. He was a bit of a hard case and he'd spent many years withdrawn from and that sort of thing. But he was a hard case old guy. And he piped up one Sunday morning reading and I think Ray Gordon asked him, what have you got for us this morning, Bruce? And Bruce says, I saw Jesus this morning. He was just so fresh and so honest. And I used to love old Bruce. And I remember one time, well, not long actually before we were shut up, we went on a bit of a tour of New Zealand and we flew down to Dunedin and got a rental car and we went into Bruce's sister's place where they were caring for Bruce at that time. I walk in the door and he says, Malky, old bastard, how are you? Just that genuine thing from this old man. It's just loved the old ones like that. And there was Colin Powell. He was a real gem too. His son Michael is one of the ones that's high up in the accounting in Hamilton. I actually sent Michael an email a while ago to see if he was interested in talking to me because Michael was always a breath of fresh air. He was questioning too, but he got shut down and he's been drawn into the Hales web of accounting and stuff like that. So he's probably got too many contracts drawn up and it cost him too much to get out or actually even just be himself. But his father was, he was a professional dentist. Well, actually he was more than that. He was he used to do face reconstructions and teeth reconstructions. He was a brilliant man, very learned man. One of the last of the ones to get a university degree and he is an orthodontist, that's what he was. So, but I used to love him for his simplicity and stuff like that. We asked him for tea once on a Sunday night and he couldn't come because he was patching up some guy that had jumped out of a window at the Waikato Hospital and damaged himself. And there was Colin Powell after the morning read and he'd got a call up and he was in the hospital performing surgery on this guy.
Wow.
And he eventually turned up for tea at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock or whatever. And we were just all enthralled by his story. He was just a man doing beautiful work and following his trade. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. But, I mean, we've just got this wrong idea that what's good and what's evil they have in the church. It's like, guys, Mr. Hales, he's a wealthy man and he may have actually contributed to your wealth. So you may be well off and you think you might owe him something, but let me tell you something, you owe him nothing. That's not the Christ. Look in your Bible and just look through what it means, why Christ was crucified. And you'll see, if you see it, you look at it carefully, you'll see that Bruce is following the line of the Pharisees and what he's doing is not right. But anyway, that's my little story.
And once you see it, you can't unsee it. That's the good, right? That's the good part about it all.
Once those scales fall off your eyes, you can't put them back on. I used to say to my dad, I said, Dad, I says, you guys can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
You're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But it's a sad thing. Like I got blamed for my dad had a heart attack and I I went to see him in hospital, and it was almost like the way he was talking to me, it's like, Dad, I'm not responsible for you having a heart attack. I know it's very sad for you and Mum that we haven't come back and stuff like that, but you can't put that load on me, but they will.
Yeah, they certainly
do.
They do. Yeah.
They'll manipulate you. And manipulate
I was
your
blamed
mind.
For every time my parents got sick. Yeah, it is what they do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so sad. But I just say, look, come out here. It's the world still, it can be a confusing place. It can be a hard place to get ahead and that sort of thing. But there's one thing you've got out here, and that's your freedom.
Yeah.
And it's a big thing. You see the Holocaust survivors and stuff like that, and it's in some ways, it's not so different. Wickedness is in us all. And you've really got to make a decision. Do I want it to flourish, or do I want the good to flourish? And it's a daily battle. I mean, I guarantee that, Cassie and Cheryl, you have the same things. It's like every day you've got to make a decision to do good.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully evil doesn't flourish. But it's got to be a conscious thought. You've got to crush it down sometimes. You look at some people that come into your life and you make a judgment. I think as brethren, we're very quick to judge other people. And that's something that I constantly know I have to judge in myself. It's not a good trait. But it's lovely to... I love my PNG boys. It's because there's such a simplicity about them. They just want to do the right thing. They want to do the right thing with such earnestness that they'll, if you ask them a question, the answer is always yes. They know how to do this or know how to do that. And it's like, bollocks, you don't. And I've said to them, I says, when they come to me and ask me, oh, how do you think I'm doing, Malcolm? And I go, look, you're doing great. And I try and encourage them. I said, but look, if there's one fault you've got, and I says, I get it, where you come from. Don't ever be afraid to ask questions. If you ask questions and you tell me that you don't know how to do something or you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to berate you or get at you for what you don't know. I'll help you to learn. And it's a wonderful gift to be able to teach people. And I'm not very good at teaching. I struggle with my family and just how to address it correctly sometimes and that sort of thing. But that's just me and my simple ways or my inadequacies. And look here, kids, I tell you what, your dad, I may be nearly 60, but I'm still learning how to do this life thing. There's no right or way wrong. We've all got an individual way of doing it, but
I don't think we're ever done learning. You're not done. Even when you take your last breath, you're learning how to take that last breath. Absolutely. And I think what I want to add to that is that in order to be able to get into that sense of freedom and understanding what it is that you're under, you've got to realize you have choice, right? And if you aren't able to ask questions or realize that you have a choice, I want to explain to you that you're in a cult. Okay. There's lots of cults in this world, lots and lots of cults that are in this world, but there is cults and then there's destructive cults. If you are in a group that doesn't allow you to ask questions, or teach you that you have choice to learn about yourself and who you are, you're in a destructive cult. You no longer have your brain. One of the biggest things that I've been telling the insiders that are all trying to leave right now, and when they go to leave, is you can't trust your brain. It's been brainwashed. You can't trust your heart because they're going to manipulate it. But one thing that you can trust is your gut. You have to follow your gut. Get out of your head. Get out of your heart. And get into your gut. It is the strongest point in the human body. Trust your gut.
Actually,
they don't
very,
have control of that.
Very powerful, isn't it, Cheryl, that gut? And it's one thing I've relied on for a long time with a lot of people. I know over 12 years ago, I had a gut feeling that someone I knew, it was just, you're not a good person. And it took 12 to 15 years of time for it to become very apparent that, yeah, you're a dirty scumbag of a person. But my gut was right. And I could just 100% I agree with you there. Trust that gut.
You got to trust your gut.
There's something deep down of you. And I do go back to the teaching of my parents. And I believe, I bless them and I love them. And And I know that they did in their heart the best job, the best way they knew possible. And as I said earlier on, there's no roadmap that us parents will follow when we're bringing up kids. We're learning hard out along the way. But I know my parents did the best to their ability and their knowledge, and I thank them for that. Mm-hmm. And because what I realized too over the years, they instilled in me these principles that have trained my gut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other thing I do say, Cheryl, to that too, is like, because I've worked for a lot of people with a lot of people, and on any given day of my job, I've got people from Kazakhstan and Borneo and Ireland and Africa. And so they come from all walks of life and all different divisions. There are some people in this world that have got a bad gut. Because, and in some ways, it's not always their fault. It's their upbringing stuff. And I do feel sad and for some people because they've had a terrible upbringing and they haven't had any good role models,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So their gut actually doesn't give them the same triggers that it does you and I. And you've got to be very thankful for the Christian upbringing and just being taught what's right and what's wrong. It's a lovely thing to have, and hopefully it'll guide you rightly in your life and stuff like that, and you can be a beacon for what's right instead of a beacon for what's wrong. I mean, I know we get taught that, I mean, we hate sin, but we love the sinner. And it's the same with kids. We were taught when we were bringing up our kids, you never say to your kid, you're a stupid piece of work, you are, because that can be indelible on a kid, and they may never get that out of their heart. They may go through their life thinking, oh, my dad just tells me I'm stupid, how can I change, because that's a label I've got and I'm forever stupid. The better thing to say is, that was a really stupid thing to do, son, but let's show you how to do it a better way. So it's a very crucial thing, but some of these children and some of these people in life, they haven't had the blessings that we've had. So it's also something we've got to be very, very thankful for. And I thank my parents daily that they've given me that ability to judge right and wrong. But it's definitely a training thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's taken me many, many years of therapy to regain my trust of gut. But once you get it, you remember it and you don't let it go again, right? Like, it's just, you know, my heart really goes out to everybody in there right now. We knew that this was going to get chaotic. We knew it was going to get messy. It's just, my heart breaks for them in there. It really does, because there's good people in there that are seeing through the system. They're seeing that the very tight spot that they are in, and it is that everybody's going to sacrifice something, right? You're going to sacrifice family. You're going to sacrifice money. Nobody's all going to be leaving together. I mean, the best thing is to do is to try and leave together as a family, get out when the kids are young, or get out before you have to get married. But it's just knowing that the messiness will also lead you, right? If you, even though it's messy, you're still going to be led out of there. It is. To me, it is the devil's lair. It is the lion's den that is filled with all these, you know, all the wolves in sheep clothing. And it is. It's just, it is not a Christian church at all.
Going back to the cult, the feeling that you're in a cult if you haven't got a choice, if you don't trust that our description of what the PBC is, I would encourage people to look into other cults, because they're not the only ones that are like this. And if you start to look at other cults and look at stories of leavers from other cults, you will start to resonate with those stories, and you will start to recognize little parts of their story that actually is the same as what you're going through. And then you will realize that you're in a cult, because the PBCC are not the only destructive cult out there. There is a lot of other cults out there. And if you think that we're just opposers and we're just attacking the PBCC, and you don't trust us, don't look at what we're saying. Go and look at other cults. Go and look at other survivor stories from different cults. Then you will realize that they are all the same thing. They're all controlled the same way. They all brainwash you, program you in a way that controls your every move. And
there's
that's
one
when
common
you
thread.
You are also
yeah, there's
involved.
One common thread to them all, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is don't ask questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And asking questions is actually one of the healthiest thing a man can do. And I know I was taught in school, I was always the one that put up my hand in class and said, I'm sorry, miss, I don't understand the question. And some of the kids would laugh at you. It's like, oh, he knows nothing. That's not the point. The fact that you have the ability to ask questions, and in a teaching, a school situation, obviously the teacher is there to answer the questions. But it's such a healthy thing that you can do is just to ask questions.
But also,
because it helps you understand.
Yeah, but also if I don't, like, I don't really, it doesn't make sense that they're not allowed to ask questions, because if you're so correct in your thinking, you wouldn't be fearful of the questions because you would then be able to prove your answer. So
yeah.
It doesn't make sense that they can't ask questions, because that just proves that they're unsure of the answer, or they may fear that they can't give you the answer.
That's right, or they don't want you to hear the true answer. You imagine, I mean, I've got my pilot's license. So you imagine when the instructor says to me, okay, so when we turn the engine off, the plane's not going to fall out of the sky. You imagine if I wasn't allowed to ask why. I thought that's what happened. So the engine dies, you can't fly anymore. Why doesn't it just crash? Because, and then they explain it. Well, that's not how the laws of physics work. So if you didn't have the ability to ask questions, it creates more issues than it solves.
Yeah, you
and
just
it
get more questions.
It's one of the strongest indicators. I mean, look, I know the brethren don't like being labelled a cult because it's sort of a horrible word. It's a horrible word because cults are horrible things. You've got to realise that. And I know I raised it with my brother once, and of course now I'm an opposer. It's like, well, good luck to you. It's like, once again, there's just Malky asking questions. I'm sorry. That's what I do in life, for better or for worse. You know, but it's like, guys, you're not a protected species. I mean, I said to one of my friends, I says, okay, look, I'll ask you another question. Here's Malky again. Okay, so we're both going to heaven, right? Yeah, I hope so, Mal. I hope so for your part. It's like, yeah, okay. Well, that's great. So tell me what's going to happen in heaven. What are we going to do all the time? We've got eternity, for Pete's sake. Are you going to talk to me? Yeah. Well, why won't you talk to me now? I'm not going to be any different. Of course, silence again. There's no logical answer to that. None whatsoever. Because it's Christ we're talking about. It's a central point, isn't it? It's not whether Cheryl can save me, whether Cassie can save me, or whether Steve Simmons can, or Mr. Howells, or none of that. None of them can save me. Only one person, Christ. So we're all sinners saved by grace. It's another common thread we've all got.
Yeah.
So just get over it, guys. We're no special. It's not special.
That opposer tag is so quick to be late to thrown at anybody that speaks out. But if they actually listen to the reason why we speak out, it's because we care and love about the people that are still stuck.
Yeah.
We genuinely feel motivated to speak out and tell the truth because we want those people to really have the scales pulled off their eyes. We want them to be able to see the truth. And it's so, it's really sad that they will throw you out as an opposer because you're telling the truth. And
it's so true, isn't it, Cassie? Because I mean, I've had multiple people. My wife tells me I need to get over it and move on, and that's fine. I don't hold that against her at all. But it's for that very reason. I'm not an opposer. The fact is, there's actually still a lot of people in there I really care for. I fear that they're like sheep running over this cliff when they don't need to be.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, I'm trying to help you before it's too late. And it's like, Melky, get over it, mate. Just move on and live your life. It's like, yeah, well, that's fine. What if everybody in the world said that?
Yeah. And it's not.
Get over it, live on with your life. How selfish is that?
To me, it is. It's just, I couldn't, if I was still stuck in there and this movement was out here, I would be like, please, like, yes, give me everything. Tell me it to me. Give me 100 podcasts so that I can hear it over and over and over and over and over so that it can get through. I would want someone to tell me I'm in a burning building if I didn't know I was in a burning building. To me, it's not about getting over it. It is about having the compassion. It's offering the truth. It's offering what we're seeing, what they can't see. It's like, you know, someone phoning you up and being like, hey, 10 miles up ahead, there's like an avalanche that's happened. You're going to have to go a different route. I would want to know that. So it's just these podcasts are not because we're not getting over it. These podcasts are done. So not only is very healing telling your story, but it's twofold. We're healing as we're telling them, but at the same time, we're trying to carve a path out of this forest for them to realize that there's this huge field of all these opportunities and choices that they don't realize that they have. That's why I do it. That's why we all do it.
Yeah.
It is. I sometimes feel like I've got this little red flag and I say, it's like I'm holding it up there and it's like it's getting machine gunned down. It's like, guys, this thing here, it's going to help you. It's not going to hit you. I often think back to when I was in there and I was a totally different person in there than I am today. In one way, I believed everything I was told. I was very helpful. I used to do all the generator runs at the main hall, and I did all the air conditioning on the hall and helped Dad wire up the cold control panel and did all the welding because I had an air conditioning business and stuff like that. So I was very committed to it. I was trying to do the right thing and live the life, because this is a life. It was only because when I started asking people, I used to go to street preaching. Okay, I had a hot little escort car and I wanted to take that to the meeting to show off to the boys and stuff like that, and the girls probably. And the only way I could get that to the meeting on a Friday night was I had to say to Dad, hey, Dad, I'm going to go to the street preaching. So off I'd go to the street preaching and preach on the street just so I could take my little escort to the meeting. So, I mean, that was a bit devious, but it was my way of getting escorts. I mean, I was quite proud of my little escort. Not that you're allowed to be proud of a car, by God. You had to shut the door if you got a new car and turn around and not look back. But it's like, look, guys in there, you're allowed to be happy with what you've got. You know, I've got several projects in the shed that I love working on because it gives me a sense of peace and stuff over there. And probably should have put it into shares or houses or something like that, but who cares?
And it's just, you know, the just thing is, is you don't need millions and millions and millions of dollars to make it out here. You don't need a lot of things that those insiders with one foot in, one foot out, they get hooked up on is the finances, the money. The means that you are living by right now will be far less when you get out here, right? You're not entertaining the way you're entertained. You don't need the amount of money that you're needing right now in there out here. It's two different lifestyles.
You don't have to impress the Joneses.
No.
We'll keep up with them.
Exactly.
No, we'll keep up with them. It doesn't have to be a better meal than old Joey's last week at the break, because you're not trying to impress anyone. You're just being you, and that's the most beautiful thing out here. You can just be you, warts and all. It's like, I mean, yeah, my body's gone to the pack after I blew myself up, but it really doesn't matter. People love me for being me, not for what I've got.
I have a question for you. What would you say to Bruce Hales and his family and minions? Because we know they watch them. What would you say to him?
Oh, just say, Bruce, why don't you come around here and just share a coffee and sit down with us?
Yeah.
And I'd say, Bruce, all the money, you know as well as I do, it's harder for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
Think of that scripture, Bruce. Really, all your material assets, they don't matter a toss. When your time's up and you go to meet your maker, what do you think you're going to be judged on? And I'd really like to ask Bruce that question. How do you think when you get to the pearly gates, you're going to be judged? Do you think God's going to turn to you and say, Bruce, you've lived a wonderful life. You've led a lot of people to salvation. Ask yourself that honestly.
Yeah, that's what concerns me. I mean, it must take some kind of narcissistic mind to be praying for the removal of opposers because they're speaking up about the truth when you're at the end of your life and you're about to go to heaven. Like, I'd be more concerned about how I was going to be judged, given the things that given the things that he's done to people. I'd be more concerned about the way.
He truly believes he's sinless.
But does he? Like,
But narcissism, like, we know he's a narcissist, right? And narcissistic people 100% believe the lies they tell themselves. So I do 100% think that he believes the lies he tells himself.
I think that's absolutely correct. I believe he's got a mental condition because there's someone else in the United States that's very similar to that.
Well, most cult leaders.
Their behavior.
Yeah.
They believe, I mean, I've had friends that they believe the BS that comes out of their mouth. 100%. They've got no doubts about it.
Yeah.
And that's the fear.
Yeah. Did you have any one-on-one contact with Bruce while you were in? Like, did you ever meet him?
No, never. He came to power after we were gone.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
And so John Hales was actually starting to decline in his health towards the end of our thing too. Well, John Hales wasn't actually in power for that long, was he? Before his health declined.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't have much to do with him. Yeah. I called BS on it too early.
Well, thank you so much. That was a lot.
Thank you for your time.
You know, it's. I hope that there are some families inspired by listening to you. I think every person who comes on here reaches different people inside there because many people resonate. I love how vulnerable you were. I think it's so important to show our emotions. I think it's the one thing that I have been told over and over from people who leave that gets lost in there. They forget they have these emotions. They get programmed that they don't have these emotions. Then they start watching these podcasts where we're emotional and it wakes it up in them. So I am very grateful that you allowed yourself to be vulnerable and raw today. I know that many insiders appreciate that. I'm just very grateful. Thank you so much for coming on and telling your story and letting people know that there is hope out here and there is choice out here.
Interesting, isn't it? We're in a different generation today where the social media thing is so powerful.
It's very powerful. And
actually, unfortunately, I say for Bruce, he's allowed it to come about.
Yeah.
And he has no idea if the can of worms he's opened.
Yeah.
It's like that old saying, what is it? A little bit of leaven leavens the whole lump and the thin edge of the wedge. I said years ago, very soon after we left, when we went to a rugby game and there were some P boys there and talked to someone about it and they said, oh, you're sort of allowed to do that. And I said then, that is the thin edge of the wedge. He may think he's helping them by letting them do this stuff, but what he's doing, he's actually letting them get a glimpse of something else.
Yeah.
And it'll be his undoing. I mean, I know a lot outside, we all talk about the demise of the Peebs and that sort of thing, and we sort of hope for it in a way. I don't hope for it because, in a way, it's a great social network. It's a great place to bring up kids. They have so much interaction with other kids and you do with other parents. And it's a great, you know, for newborn mums and newborn children with mums that are unsure of what to do. It's a great social environment. It truly is. But unfortunately, the other stuff, it overshadows it.
Yeah.
And you know, I just say that to people in there. It's like, look, you may have had some good memories, and that's what my wife and my family, they give me a hard time about. It's like, stop talking about all the good times you had in there, Dad. We've had so much good times out here. And it's like, yeah, I get their argument. I do get it. Yeah, good times together.
Yeah.
Can't we talk about that?
there's a lot of good churches out. Like, there's tons of churches out here that give that same feeling. You know, I truly believe that the PBCC is too diseased to be able to deconstruct and stand back up. Do I think there's going to be a tumbling? I do think that there's going to be a tumbling, but I do think that it will. I still think that it will be around. I don't think it will be demolished, but I do think people are starting to understand their choices. They're leaving, they're finding their life. And I think little by little, by little, by little, people will wake up. The hails I see coming down. Out of anything, I know from the stuff that I've come across and that everything that has landed on our lap, the Hales dynasty will be ended. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that the Hales dynasty will end. But I do think that the PBCC will find a way to still continue without
the Hales. But it will take a lot if they truly want to find Christ again, because in a way, they've got to revisit the Aberdeen thing, don't they?
Yeah.
And they've got to have a true judgment of it. They've got to be honest about it. I mean, I can remember my dad, because Dad used to be involved in the hearing systems in the hall. He spent a lot of time. I can remember him down in the garage at 10 o'clock at night, and you'd hear from down the garage, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And he was testing the mics and these things with his oscilloscope and stuff on the bench. We invested a lot of time in it. But Dad used to also get the tapes for the meetings. And I can remember playing with my toys on the floor, and Dad was just listening to tapes and listening to tapes. So there's a lot of depth to Dad and what he'd heard. And then later on, when he got withdrawn from, because he disagreed with Don Scarlett in Auckland. And that took quite a few years of getting back to the church. But it's like, for the Peebs to survive, and I'd love them to remain together as a unit, there's a lot of evil they need to judge.
Yeah.
But at the moment, they don't even call it evil. So there's a long way to go.
There's a long way to go, absolutely. And I mean, all we can do is keep doing what we're doing, offering a platform out here for survivors to tell their story that relate to those inside, offering to hold space for those that are trying to leave, offering to hold an intention, right? Offering to put people where they need to be put once they're trying to leave, offering the support. There's so much support. I know I started the podcast saying this. I'm going to end the podcast saying this again, is that there is so much support out here. You have way more support than you actually are even going to be able to fathom, because you haven't experienced it the way that we've experienced it. But there is a lot of support. Yeah, there's just support through so many avenues. So please reach out to us if you're looking for that support.
100%. And I'd also say to them too, it's like, these are people that will understand your train of thought in your brain.
Yeah.
Because we've all been through it. We've been through the struggles you're going through right now. Yeah. And you'll find this level of understanding. And I guess that's why some people say, why you join that Facebook group? You know, it's not doing you any good. Well, I'll tell you why I joined it. Is because if I came up with something, all of a sudden, there was another 50 people that got where I was coming from and understood it. And obviously, I found solace in that. It's like, it's a beautiful thing. It's like, you're all compatriots. I mean, Cheryl, I've never met you. Cassie, I've never met you. But I know I'd sit down with a meal with you, because there's that same compassion in you, and there's the same struggles in you that are in me. And I'd just say to those in there, be restful. The world's not full of the evil one. There's a lot of people out here that understand you and will love you and know where you're coming from and know the struggles you're going through. They're very real struggles, incredibly real.
And we'll heal the rest of our lives from being in there, right? Like, to me, it's like, again, it's not about getting over it and putting it behind me. It's in me. It's in every cell. It lives in me. So I like to be very self-aware. I'm very aware of my emotions. I'm aware of my thoughts. I don't deny who I am in this moment. And I know what I've gone through, and I know that I'll be healing this for the rest of my life. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to enjoy my life. I enjoy my life very much, but I'm not naive to the fact of where I came from. And I do get frustrated sometimes when people say, you know, you just get over it, put it away. It's the past. The past is us. The past is in us. It lives in us. And if you are indoctrinated through a system like that, our brain is always needing therapy. We're always needing some sort of tool to continue healing ourselves forward. So those of us that get together and we are healing together, it's not that we haven't left this or we can't get over this and we haven't left this behind us. It's that we're just very active in our healing. I am very active in my healing. I'm aware of it. I know when I get triggered. I know what triggers me. And sometimes I don't even know how to get out of that triggering, but I know how to sit in it. That's the key, is I know how to sit in self-awareness that the cult that I was raised in has put my body into trigger mode over, right? Like there's triggers everywhere. There's absolute triggers everywhere. We can't deny them. Yeah. It's either, are you aware of them or are you denying them? Because I know that unresolved issues from your past will show up later on in life as health issues. They'll show up as mental issues. Yeah. Shows up as dementia. I say this over and over again, that those people that think they can just put it in a suitcase, tuck that suitcase away, it'll catch up to you. It will catch up to you. Therapy is super important. Another support system that's out here for after you leave. There is tons of therapists that have dealt with cult survivors. There's a ton of support that can get you back up on your feet and how to deal with life every day for as long as you live because of the system that we were in. It's not a magic wand.
And Olive Leaf Network will point you in that direction too. They can give you a recommendation for therapists that have experience in religious trauma and things like that also.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, it'll help you find Malcolm. It'll help you find Cheryl. It'll help you find Cassie. And it'll give you peace. It really will. Knowing yourself and just being restful in that. You don't have to fight it. It's not something you have to fight. You can be quite comfortable. And that was the interesting thing in my coma. It's like at one stage, and you never know with dreams, at what stage was I close to death when I dreamed this or that or what, you don't know. But at one stage, I was in a coffin and I was in a container and I was out under the tree in the backyard and the container was all hydraulically driven because I'm a mechanic, right? The container was closing in and I was in the coffin and I could see everyone mourning on the porch because we've got a lovely little setting here and they're crying and talking as you do at a funeral and stuff like that. And while the containers were closing in, I was at peace with myself. And I said to myself, oh, so something's obviously bad's happened and I'm in the coffin. I'm obviously dead or dying. I don't know why. I can see the people on the porch and I'm aware of my surroundings, but I can't talk. But I can hear them and that sort of thing. And this went on for a while and then the container sort of closed in, and then I was sort of transposed to I don't know the name of the guy or whatever, but there was this person and we're in a little room. It was quite old or whatever, and a little desk, and he had a document that was the final death certificate for me. And he had to sign it before he'd release it to my wife. And my wife came into the room and I was trying to get her, don't let him sign it. I've not quite gone. I'm not out of here yet.
Wow.
And I don't know how it happened, but finally she wouldn't let him sign it. And she took me away. And then it chopped to another part of the dream. And it's like, that was so powerful for me. And it's like, I don't know, I can't answer all these questions, but I almost look back on my accident now as a real privilege, that I've had the privilege of having those dreams. And I do just think, my time wasn't up then. It wasn't time for me to go. And I've been given the second chance now to find out. And I love it. I love the journey about Christianity. It's like, and I love being able to talk to my friends that some of them are such powerful Christians and have got this real powerful faith. And I'm able to say to them, look, I just don't have it. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether I believe in God. Well, I don't know that I don't. And I've listened to a lot of Jordan Peterson's stuff as well, and sort of thing. And look, I'm still on a journey. And I just say that any of those in there and thinking of leaving and stuff, it's a journey. And we're just here to encourage you. There's, as Cheryl said earlier on, there's so many people out here that will help you. And we'll go at your pace. If you're it's like the footsteps in the sand where, you know, you only saw the single footsteps, and it's like, where was I? And Jesus said, I was carrying you. Yeah. It's like, I tell you what, there's people out here that have really got the Spirit of Christ, and they'll help you. And there's messed up old me. It just doesn't know whether he's saved or there's going to be a heaven or hell. Doesn't know whether there's a God or a Christ. Look, I tell you what, guys, be restful. Be restful about me too. I'm still on a journey. I'm learning. Get there.
And you know what, Malcolm? You've got such a compassionate heart. And that's what counts, right? That's what counts. It's not about what you believe. It's not. It's the arms you extend. It's the words we give to one another. Right? It's not about these beliefs that were so indoctrinated into us. We're allowed, I walk with crutches. My crutches are broken for my faith. I'm like, that's how broken my faith is. But the thing is I know in my heart and I know in my gut that we need to be offering this kindness and this compassion and these open doors. We need to care more. For me, my religion is caring. I just want to care. That is my religion. You can label it under whatever anybody else wants to do. But for me, as long as I am caring for others around me, I'm caring for my own health. When you talk about your second chance, I look back at my life and what the hell I went through. I was in therapy two weeks ago and I sat with her just sobbing of like, I can't believe I'm alive. I literally cannot believe that I survived what I went through and that I wasn't sold into some, I mean, I literally could have been sold to a whole other group of people and I wasn't. So I am just grateful that whoever was caring over me, who was caring for me, that's what I intend to do. I intend to care for those inside. I intend to care for those people that reach out to do the podcast. I am a very, very emotional person. And I'm learning to love that part of me instead of be like, you know, Cheryl's just too much, right? That's how I was raised. You're just too much. You're just too much, Cheryl. I know. You know what? I might be too much, but you can't have too much emotion on this planet. We can't. We cannot care too much.
That's right. You be you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And give yourself a big hug.
So I don't look at you, Malcolm, as somebody who's just, to me, I think you're like the perfect person to be a recipient and to be receiving of people reaching out to you because they know you've got the heart. You can feel it. It oozes out of you of how much you care. And that we just can't tuck away into a closet and be like, I'm just going to get over the past because we care too much. It doesn't mean that we don't have a life. We do have a life, but we also are mindful of the rearview mirror in front of us and what it's pointing back to. And so every so often we need to look in that rearview mirror and be reminded of the burning building behind us that still needs to be dealt with, right?
That's right. You can't remove it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, very interesting. I guess that's what I love about my PNG job, and that even though I hate being away from Dale, it's like we've got a little paradise on earth here, and we both just love it to bits. And yet I've got to leave it for 6 months of the year, and it just grinds on me. But I love the people. I've often said the company I work for, it's clumsy, it's archaic, they do some really dumb stuff. But there's two things they do for me. They pay me really well. And they also enable me to have to do with these people. And it's the people that make our company, not the company itself. And that's a blessing. And we start thinking we're getting old and things start breaking down. And you think, well, I wonder what my purpose in life is. I wonder what it is. And you may die with that thought. You may think, but really, if you look back, if you've helped several people, well, all of our abilities are different. We've all got different strengths and weaknesses. Just have some quiet faith in yourself.
Yeah.
And believe.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Malcolm. I really appreciate this all. And you know what? We're with you all inside there. We really are. Until next time, everyone, much love to you. Bye-bye.
Yes, love you all. Thank you so much.
You bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
How can you support Get a Life podcast? You can donate internationally via PayPal at www.paypal.me/Get a Life podcast. PayPal also has a QR code that can be scanned. Or donate to our Get a Life podcast GoFundMe. If you're in a high-demand religious group and need help, please go to oliveleaf.network. To share your story or be a guest on the show, email info.getalife@proton.me. Check out www.get-a-life.net for Get a Life merchandise, books, and ways to support or get support. Please remember to like this video, subscribe to Get a Life, and comment.